Do you have any idea how big those rocks were? Honestly. Yeah, David tells a fairly accurate story, although without some of the gloss. When I actually first met him, looking for articling jobs at the end of law school, and I didn't really know his background, and we met, and at some point I said, "Oh my God, are you one of those Peterborough Coles?" And we went from there. A friend did ask me, "So, you know, what kind of humor are you going to use in your talk?" I said, "Well, Nick, you know, it's on the death penalty. It's not really funny. And I'm pretty angry about it, so I'm not really sure what kind of humor I might use today, but I'll have a few comments along the way. Yes, I worked for 14 different ministers. I started under the Mulroney government, then the Craichen government, Martin, and those people that came after that, the Harper government. And so one advantage is I have seen it all, and someday I will write a book. The death penalty and Canada's new death penalty, and I wanted to be provocative because one of my concerns is that people who don't follow criminal justice as obsessively as some of us don't realize is that we do have the death penalty back again in Canada. And some of you are going to say, "Well, look, no, we abolished that death penalty back in 76. It rose up in a House of Commons debate again in 87. And it was defeated at that time. And everything has been good. And Canada is one of the many countries around the world without a death penalty. There are about 50-odd countries that still have it. Syria, China, United States, Libya. But amongst us is a Trojan horse that has been around now for a few years. And this Trojan horse basically said, if a horse can speak, if we can't re-erect the scaffold and the noose in the town square, let's quietly achieve the same result behind prison walls. We'll call it something else, and we'll pretend that we're still a humane, caring, forgiving society, while we are still sending people to prison for one single reason, not to be rehabilitated and rejoin us, but rather to die. And if we are sending people to prison for the sole purpose of their dying in that prison, then to me it doesn't make a lot of difference if it's tomorrow or next week or next month. It is sending them there to die, and it is a death sentence. So how are we doing this exactly? And I'll try to be quick on the law. You all know that a lot of people are serving more than one sentence for more than one conviction at a time. So judges have to make sense of those two sentences. And one of the things that they do, of course, fundamentally is to say, will the sentences run concurrently, which is to say together, or will they run consecutively? Will we add them up? So if you have a 5-year sentence and a 2-year sentence, if they're concurrent, you're serving overall 5 years, but if they're consecutive, you're serving 7. You all know for first and second degree murder, of course, the mandatory sentence is life imprisonment. First degree murder is a minimum of 25 years. And second degree is somewhere between 10 and 15, depending on what the judge decides. Now, Canadian judges, being very wise and sensible people, have said, sure, you can have consecutive or concurrent for definite sentences, but when it comes to a life sentence, don't be ridiculous. A person only has one life to live, so you can only have concurrent sentences with a life sentence. Everything runs in tandem with the life sentence. Of course, this is very different from the United States, where they're quite happy to have someone serving, you know, 8 life sentences plus 200 years. And Canadians have simply said, no, that is not the route we're going to go down. Now, that doesn't mean that if someone has 2 life sentences for murder, that somehow we haven't acknowledged or aren't acknowledging the seriousness of that. On the contrary, you have charges laid for each offense. You have testimony called in the courtroom for each offense. You have victim impact statements for each offense. You have a conviction registered for each offense and a sentence imposed for each offense. And trust me, if you go to the penitentiary with two life sentences, you are going to get to know maximum security really well. You are going to spend a very long time in maximum security. You're going to be assessed as a higher risk. Any hint of aggression is going to be recorded. And if you eventually get close to parole eligibility, you will have to display a conversion to sainthood that would make this church proud. But these facts have never silenced critics who, I might harshly say, have no knowledge of the system or of the people doing time in it. And they hurl the slogans, and I have heard these slogans for decades now. Discount justice, sentence freebies, volume discount. The Reform Party, y'all remember them, and later the Conservative Party, bought heavily into this rhetoric about discount justice if you have more than one life sentence for murder. As did, I might say, a so-called Liberal MP from the Toronto area. No names. They were always very clear that their preferred sentence for murder was simply outright execution. All right, they wanted the death penalty outright, but they knew there was not a unanimous public opinion about that. So under the Conservatives, their quest became, how do we do this in a way that it doesn't look like it, so we can kind of, no one will know that we're doing it. So at first, they did want to legislate consecutive life sentences. Finally, they did accept that judges had not allowed this. They could not do that. Then, they wanted to legislate absolutely no parole eligibility for murder and treason. Now, I was still on the job at the time. I said, wait, treason? Really? Treason? Is there a big crime wave that I've missed? What? We're cracking down on treason? Absolutely. So I looked up. Well, I don't think we've had very many treason cases to crack down on. We had two in the 1800s. That would be Louis Riel and Chief Poundmaker. Then, in 1940s, in the war, a guy from Calgary actually fought with the Japanese and killed some Canadian troops. So that was another one. So we go from 1880s, two, another one, 1940s, holy, now we're in 2018. I don't know why Sean Fine has not written about this, because I'm telling you, it's a crime wave, and somebody better get serious on this treason thing. Anyway, all of which to say is, a lot of time the devil's in the detail, as they say. My God. Anyway, get on that, Sean. That bill was actually tabled in Parliament, but it didn't go anywhere. So finally, because Mr. Harper and his people just never gave up, in 2011 they settled on what we have now, which is, all right, we can't make the life sentences consecutive, but we can make the parole ineligibility periods consecutive. We could add those up. That would be good. So the result of that is, if you receive three life sentences for a first-degree murder, the judges would have the discretion. And I'm going to come back to that, because normally I like judges having discretion. Not so much in this case. They could add those three periods of 25 so that the person has 75 years of parole ineligibility. Okay? Or if you had one life sentence for second-degree and one for first-degree, you could add 10 plus 25 for a total of 35. Whereas prior to 2011, it ran concurrently. Now, let's just pause for a moment. There was actually no substantive flaw in the way that we calculated these sentences prior to 2011. There were, in fact, legislative provisions that addressed the issue of people who got more than one life sentence at different times. Now, they're slightly complicated provisions. You probably haven't read them, late at night on a Friday, but they did exist. And, of course, no one with multiple murder convictions is going to be released at first eligibility by that wild and crazy parole board and going out to commit more murders. It's never a good time with these emotional cases to talk about statistics, so I won't dwell on it, but there is this great myth that we have to do something permanent with people who have killed because they will go out and kill again. The actual stats are a fraction of 1%. At which point, one of my 14 ministers would probably say to me, yes, but if just one life can be saved, Mary. To which my response is, I'm very tired of hearing that phrase. Because if we wanted to save just one life, or indeed thousands of lives, you know what we would have done with the biggest killer in our country, which is impaired drivers on our roads? We would have mandated installing blow boxes in every single vehicle. The technology exists. If you've ever had your license suspended and you want it back, you're probably going to be under a condition to put that blow box in your car. The car will not start if you blow over, and it will not continue to run if you blow over. So to people who say, if only one life can be saved by how we treat a murderer, I say to you, then write to the Federal Minister of Transport and write to the auto industry, because you could save thousands of lives. I don't want to get too far off on that, but... other myths are that everyone who applies for parole gets parole. They do not. Less than half of all lifers who apply for parole actually get parole. And there are a lot of misconceptions about life on parole. I don't know if we have any people here today who are living life on parole, but I have a number of friends who are. And I can tell you it is no walk in the park. And you don't have to feel bad or feel sorry or anything else. It's just the reality. One friend in particular, not long after he'd been released on parole, I thought this was just an old saying, but he actually said to me one day in a fit of real frustration, he said, if this is what parole is going to be like, I'd rather do my time inside. I couldn't believe I was hearing it from him. If this is what parole is going to be like, I'd rather do my time inside. So I'll just leave that with you. So what we had under the Harper government was once again a solution in search of a problem. It was hardly the only time. Now, we elected a new government federally in 2015. And I think it was about 4 days after the election, which was November 15th, by November 19th, I had compiled a 6-page list of criminal justice reforms for the new government. I still had a lot of contacts in the government. After I did the 6-page document, then I did a 3-page document, then I did a 2-page, a 1-page, 3 bullets, you know, you name it. At the top of the list of things that should be abolished from the Harper government was this life sentence, this new death penalty. Just abolish that right now. No one gets hurt. We move forward. It'll be fine. And it is the kind of thing you would have to do quickly in a new mandate. They did not. So, how much of a problem has it been, Mary? Well, I have followed the cases very carefully, and there are a couple other crazy people in the country doing the same, so we share our notes with each other. By my count, there have been 21 cases that have considered the imposition of consecutive parole ineligibility. 21 cases. First, I was kind of surprised that we had that many multiple killings, because that's like about 3 a year. 21 cases, and 13 cases have imposed consecutive parole ineligibility. So here are some of their new parole eligibility dates. Make note, because I expect you to do something. 2066, 2085, 2089, 2091, and two people will be eligible in 2092. Some of the ages of these offenders when that parole eligibility date arrives, two of them will be 81, two of them will be 99, one will be 115 years old, one will be 128 years old, and one will be 132 years old. Bear in mind that the average life expectancy for men, and they are all men, is 78. All right? This is a death sentence. They will not live till their parole eligibility date. The youngest so far will be 55 when he's eligible, but bear in mind he will have spent 30 years in custody, double what he would have spent before. And for these people, there are no unescorted passes, okay, until 3 years before full parole. The only access to the outside world will be an escorted temporary absence pass, something medical, court appearance, that's it. They will not be outside, in some cases, until they're 115 or 132. And I am not the only person to call this the new death penalty, okay? There is a wide body of international literature that has examined this and uses terms like living death sentence, death by incarceration, a prolonged death penalty. So it's not just me being slightly crazy. The Supreme Court of Canada has also weighed in on this. See, isn't it great to be old? Because, like, you know a lot of stuff. Well, except for the stuff you've forgotten, but that's not important. Supreme Court of Canada, over 30 years ago, said the parole process saves, and this was a case of an indeterminate sentence, which is the same as a life sentence. The parole process saves indeterminate sentences from being successfully challenged under the Charter, Section 12, Cruel and Unusual Punishment. It is the existence of parole that saves that sentence from being cruel and unusual punishment, for it ensures that incarceration is imposed for only as long as the circumstances of the individual case requires. That was Justice Lafourie in the majority in the case of Lyons in 1987. So I say to myself, like, I think that still holds. Court judgments weren't a big concern for the last government, I must say. Just throw that in parenthetically. In addition, international covenants and standards all require some hope of release. So we're talking here about the Mandela prison rules under the UN, European prison rules. You name any international covenant, and we're signatories to all of them. They all require that a sentence have some element of hope. Even the International Criminal Court, which you know is designed to hear cases of war crimes, enslavement, torture, mass rape, and genocide, require a review after 25 years of custody. So, if you remember Muammar Gaddafi, prior to his death, he was charged with crimes against humanity, including murder, persecution of civilians, as well as the use of rape as a weapon of war. Had Muammar Gaddafi lived to be convicted and sentenced, he would have been eligible for review after 25 years. So I look around and I say to myself, we have worse offenders than Muammar Gaddafi? We have a worse criminal justice problem here than Libya? We're prepared to review him, Muammar, after 25 years, but not Canadian offenders? Or is this really all about government saying that they're tough on crime? Yet another one of those slogans. I wrote a piece some years ago under Mr. Harper where I said they're not tough on crime at all because the things they do have nothing to do with crime. They're irrelevant. They're actually quite soft on crime. Now, this point about judges don't have to impose this. It's in their discretion. And normally, that's a really good thing, that judicial discretion. Where did we go so wrong? Look, these cases are horrible, okay? These 21 cases, no mistake about it. They are beyond horrible. And the rhetoric has been very high, and judges are not immune to this rhetoric. Each new case refers to the case as one of the most heinous crimes in Canadian history. The other factor is that it's not just the Crowns who've been asking for these lengthy consecutive periods. Sadly, it is also some defense counsel. And I would say to you, if your defense lawyer is asking for 50 or 75 years behind bars for you, you should get a new lawyer immediately. Cancel the proceedings. Usually they cite denunciation and deterrence as their sentencing goal, and just simple incapacitation, get the person out of society. One court wrote a lengthy judgment and used a particular justification as to why the sentences were okay. He shares my last name, but he's obviously from the rogue side of the family. He unfortunately made a serious factual error in his case, and he used statistics from the parole board, so that wasn't irresponsible. And Crown and Defense saw those statistics, But he used those stats to say that if you have 50 to 75 years, don't worry, because there's always clemency. There's the royal prerogative of mercy. And he calculated you have about a 20% chance of getting that. And that's better than winning that $60 million that somebody better win one of these days. 20% chance of getting clemency. Well, I knew the minute that I read that he was on another planet. It's much less than 2%. And the problem was, the way the parole board presented their stats, they aggregated them and they included pardons that had no relevance to lifers. So I've had a couple of meetings with the parole board. They've corrected their mistake, but in the meantime, this judge used that information and the judgment is just completely wrong on that account. So I'm hoping somewhere, sometime on appeal, that will get corrected. Now, those eight courts that have not imposed consecutive PED, those eight that have considered it, they usually refer to standard sentencing principles, and they talk about totality of the sentence. They talk about the sentence should not be so crushing as to deny all hope. They do get into a little bit of ridiculous discussion about, you know, would 32 years be better than 30 or 28 or whatever. But ultimately, they've held that the normal, the usual period of 25 years is sufficient to hold the person accountable without violating the charter. And again, I must add emphasis, this is a life sentence. Now, there have been a few cases that have qualified for the consecutive, but the court didn't breathe a word about it. And one of the biggest ones right here in Ontario, of course, with the nurse or nurse's aide, Wetlaufer, who killed eight people. And six of those deaths were after 2011. So in theory, when she pled guilty, the court could have imposed, but they didn't. They just went with the standard 25. So now you've got someone like her with eight deaths, which is, and it was awful, but she's doing the standard life 25. I can't figure that out at all. This is far from over, of course. You might have seen that Mr. Bissonnette in Quebec City, who killed six people at the mosque, will be sentenced now in late January. Mr. Manassian, who has not yet been to trial, the fellow with the van here in Toronto that killed 10 people. And, of course, Mr. MacArthur, who also has not yet been to trial, with eight deaths alleged. That's Canada's new death penalty. To me, of course, one of the questions at sentencing is, what does this person deserve? What does Buddy deserve, taking all the factors into account? But I think with these extreme cases, that question loses its centrality, and I think the question should be, what do we as a society deserve? Because obviously, if you want to go with what does he deserve, you can go down that road to anything you can think of. I mean, the path of horror will take you to the great extremes. And the question, rather, is, do we want to be part of a competition to be the most vengeful? Do we want to be the most unforgiving? Do we want to erase all hope for some people who we've identified as a category who don't deserve to have hope? Are we, as a country, prepared to kill people for their breach of the law? And I think if we do this and we do it in the name of the victim, which is often the rhetoric, are we really honoring the victim? If I'm murdered tonight, God forbid, please do not be vengeful with the perpetrator in order to honor me. Honor me for who I was. Honor me for what I did. Don't come down like a ton of bricks on the person who did it in my name. Obviously, we can never forget the victim, but I think that forgiveness means that we accept what has happened and move forward, and not accept in the sense of complacency or, oh, well, that didn't matter, but in accepting that it has happened, part of it must, I think, also be allowing the perpetrator a chance at redemption that in some cases will lead to an ability to live in society. In some cases, redemption will mean only that the offender reaches some personal awareness and acknowledgement that what they did was profoundly wrong, And it's not the acknowledgement that we heard at Mill Haven earlier this week. Redemption, simply that they realize that what they did was profoundly wrong. At least then they can rejoin society in the human spirit, even if their risk is never reduced enough to rejoin physically. Seems to me so much of our energy goes into vengeance. Parliament recently devoted an entire day to reaming out a young woman who committed a horrible crime in Ontario. Horrible. But she's trying to work her way out of that very dark space. Now, she could sit in the medium security penitentiary in Kitchener. She could push a broom all day, which, by the way, is the main work activity that we offer women there. She could watch TV in the evening and never take a program. She could do that till year 25. Instead, she has chosen a therapeutic penitentiary, which the Indigenous community has named a healing lodge, and which, by the way, has been in operation for over 20 years. This is not a fly-by-night operation in the middle of Saskatchewan. And in that healing lodge, she is, yes, doing harder times. She's surrounded 24/7 by people who want to hold her to account and help her work through this. That's way tougher than pushing a broom and watching TV in Kitchener. And many years from now, she'll have a chance to demonstrate that redemption, and we'll see. As I noted, similar questions arose this past week at Mill Haven, where a very high-profile person had his first parole hearing. And some people said, well, why do we even allow someone like him a parole hearing? Well, I guess partly it's the same reason why we allow people a trial rather than just convicting them out in the street or at the police station, because we believe in something called due process and fairness, because we don't lynch people in the streets, because as a society, we still believe in fairness and decency and humanity and, yes, hope, even when some individuals don't or can't share those values. Seems to me that a society rooted in fairness, decency, humanity, and redemption is what we should offer to ourselves and to each other. None of us can ever really know the twists and turns that our life or someone else's life will take. I have met people who society was quite willing to write off as irredeemable, and they have surprised everyone. Others won't be able to complete that journey. If we offer redemption to ourselves but not to certain others, or if we offer fairness and humanity only in the easy cases, is that the best we can be? Is that the country we want to live in? And we've never had an open debate about this new death penalty or our values. And so part of my message today is to think about who do we want to be as a society. And as we approach another election year, are we communicating those thoughts to our representatives or to the Prime Minister? David noted my emails. He doesn't even get half of them. I know. There are even days when I think, okay, go for a walk. But sometimes people need to speak out, and if only to put some facts on the table and to say, do you know this is going on? And whether you like what's going on or you don't, speak up. Now, I'd like to end there on sort of an uplifting note, but I do want to add, because the long title for this talk was Canada's New Death Penalty and Other Things No One Has Told You About. So a quick note on those other things no one has told you about. Pretty much the entire Harper criminal justice legislative agenda is still in force. It is still in force. It's been 3 years. A few of the things that are still in force that might have escaped your attention in terms of sentencing, well, mandatory minimum penalties, I think virtually everyone in this country has called for an end to them. There's tons of research. Kim Pate, Senator Pate, has a bill in Parliament. The government, it's the easiest thing in the world to do. It would take a one-section amendment to the criminal code, and the government has not done it. They still have the Harper mandatory minimum penalty agenda. 15-year reviews, faint hope. Do you remember those 15-year reviews for people serving life? Because way back in 76, when we abolished the death penalty and we instituted first degree and second degree in 25 and 15, 10, we said, well, wait a minute, you know, 25 years before eligibility, that's pretty harsh. There might be some people who are redeemable well before that. So let's give them a shot at a review after 15 years, the faint hope clause. Holy smoke, we got Buddy now doing 75 years, and we don't have the 15-year review. They were abolished under the last government, and on that six-page list, 4 days after the election, was reinstitute 15-year reviews. The program worked. There were no disasters. It gave deserving candidates a chance to reintegrate and save you a ton of your tax money. That was ultimately the biggest message that the government understood. But so far, the Trudeau government, nothing. No talk of 15-year reviews coming back whatsoever. Instead, the Justice Minister moved ahead this week on the big problem of bestiality. Yes. No, I'm telling you, that was not on my six-page list. A friend of mine emailed me and said, who's having all this animal sex? You're a city boy, Daryl. That's all I can say. That was, seriously, that was the big announcement from the Justice Minister this week. She moved ahead on bestiality. We've had a lot of amendments on bestiality, by the way. This is only, like, you know, the latest in about 8 amendments. No, she did not move on mandatory minimums or 15-year reviews. In the corrections area, Harper agenda, where there's been no movement, we have this thing now for certain people that it used to be if you were denied parole, you were given another review within 1 year because we didn't want you to get lost in the system. So we'd see you again within a year's period. Then the parole board needed to save some money, so they changed it with the government in the 90s, within 2 years, okay? We'll see you again within 2 years. And you know, a bureaucracy, it defaults to the latest point, okay? Let's be clear about this. Under the Harper government, they have this list of offenders that now, if you're denied, you will get another review within 5 years. Well, do the math, people. Half the people in the penitentiary are serving sentences of less than 5 years. If they are denied at their first parole review, mathematically, they're not going to get another one within 5 years. They will have one shot at a parole application. For better, for worse, they're denied. So that hasn't changed. Criminal Records Act. Well, you've heard a lot of that this week, the pot pardons. Under the Harper government, they increased the fee to $631. They changed the name. They said some people are not eligible at all. You cannot get a pardon if you have certain convictions. And there are much longer waiting periods for anyone who does qualify. I'm actually so old, I was around when pardons were free. And I was in the room when Doug Lewis, from north of here, was the Solicitor General, and he decided to charge $50. I'll write a book and I'll tell you what he pegged it to. But from there it went to $631, which is unaffordable for most people. And people need a pardon or a record suspension for all kinds of reasons. A lot has to do with getting a job or traveling. Anyway, that fee is still $631. People are still ineligible. Now the government says it's going to take care of those pot pardons. But I will bet you the proverbial dollars to donuts, they are not going to do the bigger review or bigger changes when they do that, which they know they have to do. And they're not going to do it. Segregation, again, a bill has been tabled. And the question is, yeah, Is it really eliminating segregation, or is it just creating Seglite or Supermax? I don't have a lot of faith. Under the Conservatives also, they closed two or three penitentiaries, but they also built 2,700 new cells or bed spaces. Now, 2,700 new bed spaces in Canada, that's the equivalent of five penitentiaries that they built, okay? Have you heard a peep about what's happening with those cells? Are they in use? Are they sitting empty? You are paying for them. You are paying for them every single day. Who's in those cells? Where are they? Because I'm hearing a lot of rumors that they're sitting empty, in fact. Other things that are still the same, I could go on and on, parole conditions. Americans have moved way ahead on parole conditions, and we are just being left behind. So virtually everything from the Harper agenda is still in place, other than a few things that the courts have struck down. And I've said to people, don't put any energy into Parliament at this point. Put your energy into the courtroom and get some of these things taken care of. I want to conclude so we have time for a few questions and comments, and you can tell me that I'm out to lunch. I thought last night of a phrase I have not heard in over 3 years. Sunny ways. Hey? Y'all remember sunny ways? Uh-huh. That was going to be our country. Sunny ways. Research-based policy. Human rights in everything. And I'm looking around, and I'm just not feeling that sunny about criminal justice. What can you do about it? Well, first of all, those of you in this church are doing a whole lot by having the speaker series, because that's huge, huge, that you generate this kind of discussion in the community. And those of you who have come out to it deserve credit as well for participating in this and being interested. What can you do? Ask questions. Send emails. Send them to David. No, really, every member of Parliament, their email address is on the website. Yes, you'll probably only be communicating with a staffer, but you know what? I've had communication with staffers that's turned into, you know, some pretty powerful events. It doesn't take more than 5 minutes to send an email to your MP, and then the next week send another one, and the next week send it to some other MP. Look at who the chairs are of the Justice Committee in Parliament. Like, it takes so little to just promote the dialogue and discussion and offer solutions. One of the things I did do always with ministers, and especially with the Conservatives, is you can't just say no. That's the stupidest idea I have heard all week. You also have to say, here's an alternative. Here's something you could do. That would make more sense, would be more cost-effective. And I would just say in conclusion, honor victims, but honor them for who they were. Don't honor them for their method that they died. Let's not do this vengeance and harshness in order to honor the victims. You know, we all deserve better than that. The victims deserve better than that. The community deserves better than that. We can still hold people accountable with a life sentence and 25 years to parole eligibility. 25 years is a long time, a long time, and a lot can happen. Thank you for your attention, and I'm happy to answer any questions.